the nest when Ute Base Thomas started off years early in 1910, when the Rebbe Rashab, who was the Novi Hador, the Novi from all the Rebbes, fantastic. In 1910, that was 3 years, 4 years before World War One. That World War One changed up the whole outlook and the whole boundaries of the whole world. This was way before 1910, 1911. Rebbe called in the big chassidim, five chassidim, and he said, Zalman Havlin, he said, you I'm sending to Yisrael, and we're going to revive all Chabad in Eretz Yisrael, in Hebron, and it was much more Hebron in Yerushalayim. And the Yidden will come to Eretz Yisrael in groves. They couldn't understand what the Rebbe is talking about. One or two Yidden got out a year. But that's what he said. Then he took the other chassidim and he said, I'm sending you to the other part of Russia where the majority of Jews live. That's a little further south than Lubavitch. Then finally, he came to the youngest of all the five chassidim and he said, you, I'm going to send the Radam to America, to Boston. He had to leave his shtetl on the Zachem. And his kid Peretz was 9 years old, the oldest one who lived in Springfield. So the Rebbe said, go to America. So he came to America. The nevuah was that by your going to America, your son will save the life of my son. How do you like that? That was before anything happened. But he came to America and he did very well. That's what the Rebbe Hashab's Nevuah was. And the Peretz told him he was 9 years old when they left Russia. And before they left, his father said, Medav Gezegen Zech, say goodbye on the Oyelim. They went to Lubavitch, as there's the Talmud Tzedek Rebbe Marash. Then they went to Nezhin, where the middle Rebbe was. And then they went to Hadich. He says all the other Oyelim were plain, known, very important Oyelim. He came to Hadich, where the Alta Rebbe was buried. There was like a little teeny shul in front, and their back door had a big iron chain. You banged three times, and you went in. Ashrek, he said, he was so Ibrahim, couldn't believe it. He went in there, and the whole Oren was covered with a black silk and thousands of torn pajamas all around. But it was very Ashrek, that boy. He couldn't wait to get out. And then he came to America. Came to America till he came. The Agudas HaRabonim did not allow a Chassidish Rav in America or a Chassidish Shechet. All Litvakis, every one of them. And I noticed, and this is when I started traveling 60 years ago in different cities, so all these Rabonim, I couldn't find one Rav or a Shechet who had a child that was Shem B'Shabbos. There were all kinds of cities that were sent. There was no chid, whatever reason was. So he came in and he said, I got to make an end to this crazy business. And he brought over 50 shochtim. He brought over 50 cities of shochtim here with Berd, you don't understand? And they were here. Then comes 1927. Rebbe was 7 years already under the communists, when they closed every single shul, every single cheder, and the Rebbe had to do everything underground. The Rebbe took over the Nesiyas 1920 with a tkifis. Who ever heard of a Rebbe without a shul, without chassidim, without a farbanger? There's nothing. You're not allowed to have anything. nothing was against what the Rebbe was doing. Started all the hundreds of underground yeshivas, underground schools, and he mailed him. He thought everybody ever come and mail him and come and shit up a chicken so Jews would have kosher. Until he was working day and night. And then they arrested him. And they had all the crimes that he had committed, all down on paper, thousands and thousands of documents. They had so many secret police, they didn't know what to do with them, that they had all the documents. And they arrested the Rebbe. The Rebbe was eating supper with his family at 11 o'clock. They busted in the door, and they came over, and they said, "We're here from the secret police. We're going to arrest you, and you have to take down the information, your name." He said, "If you don't know my name, will you come into my door for it?" "What's your name?" He said, "Rabbi Schneerson. What's your job?" "I'm the leader of the Jewish people." "My name is Yisrael." "How old are you?" He said, "Rabbi, it's 136 or something." "Well," he said, "my years start from the Alter Rebbe." "Ah," so they said, "if that's the case, get out of here. Get out of here." They threw him out. And the minute he was arrested, so the Rebbe's daughter went over to a, they used to have in the streets, every couple of streets, you can send a telegram, like a box telegraph office, because nobody had phones in those days. So she went over there and she sent a telegram to Boston to the Rebbe, David Rabinovich Radam. Two words, Tate Arestirti. It's Fevre Rabinovich, the Rebbe Dovimir Rabinovich, who the Rebbe Rashab sent to Boston, was the closest chassid that the former Rebbe had in the world. He was just like a brother to the Rebbe. That's how the Rebbe would write to him. And when he got those two words, boy, he knew where Russia was. He knew what the crazy communist, Ashrek. So immediately he picked up the phone. He had a phone already, and he called Springfield to Fred Rabinovich, to Peretz, and he said, "Peretz, you have to stop everything. You're a lawyer, stop everything. You have to go to Washington and save the Rebbe's life. Take along your brother Oscar. He knows his way around. And don't waste a minute. We cannot waste a minute. It's Ashrek. Every minute is very, very important." So that telephone call to Springfield started the Geula for Yud Beis Thomas. Everything started in Springfield. He called his brother Oscar in Boston, grabbed the train. There were no airplanes in those days. Grabbed the first train that goes to Washington. It goes, that train stops in Springfield. Boston, Springfield goes right on to Washington. So Oscar also had to stop all his work. He was working for the Internal Revenue Service that collects taxes. He was not a big shot there. But if you work for the Internal Revenue, all the doors are open. Every office, there's nothing held back from you. And he was, by the Teva was, he was, whole life was in politics. Day and night he was in Washington helping Eden and pleading for them and everything else. Everybody, he knew everybody in Washington. And they knew him. And they respected him. They knew that everything that he was doing was without being get paid to help persons. And so they grabbed their, they got out in Washington, they grabbed a cab, they went to a hotel, and Oscar said to his brother, we got to work fast, who can we go? Let's go to the Supreme Court Justice Brandeis. So they grabbed a cab, they went to Brandeis, maybe he could help. So they walk into the office, so the secretary says, "Oh, how Oscar's so nice to see." Everybody knows Oscar, wherever they went. So he said, "What could I do for you?" He says, "I have to see the Supreme Court Justice." She says, "I know that Judge Brandeis would really be happy to see you. But right now the Supreme Court is in session hearing cases, so he sees nobody. But soon the session will answer, will end, whether it was in a month or so, leave your telephone number, and I'll be glad to call you, and he'll be glad to see you." He said, "But I can't wait." He said, "What can I do for you? I can't make any appointments." As they were talking there in the hallway, there was another long, long hallway going to the end of the building, and who walks by? Justice Brandeis. Must have been a coffee break or whatever it was, lunch or no. And he takes a look down the hallway and he sees, "Oscar, what are you doing here? Come over here." Everybody knows Oscar. So he goes over and he says, "Oscar, you look pale today. How do you feel?" He says, "Your Honor, it's not me. The Lubavitcher Rebbe has been arrested in Moscow for counter-revolutionary activity." Ah. He heard that. He sat down and he said, "The Prince of Israel." Remember those four words. That's what he said, "The Prince of Israel." And he says to Oscar, "Come with me into my office." They go into the office, and he gives a buzzer. He gives a buzzer to another office, and in walks Mr. Cohn, Attorney Cohn, who was his second in command, the one who used to hear all the cases. So this Cohn, I forgot his first name, is a very famous man in the whole world today because he made the United Nations Charter in San Francisco in 1957, the same guy, brilliant, brilliant man. And Justice Brandeis says to him, "Stop all your activities for the Supreme Court. Others will take over. I want you to go with Oscar and his brother to the Senate. And I want you to go with the three great senators, Senator Wayne, Senator Morris, whoever it was, three of them, and tell them we have to save the Rebbe's life." And he had to give a milsub a timer. The reason why we're doing this, what business do we have to do with a rabbi in Moscow? He tell the senators why we're doing this and why we need their help. He said, the Lubavitcher Rebbe has over 300 shulim in America, all Davnas Sahari, and there's over 50,000 tax-paying voters in those shul who get their spiritual nourishment from the Rebbe. We cannot endanger our tax-paying citizens, voters. When the senators hear about tax-paying voters, that's who puts them in office. That's who pays their salary. So that he gave them a reason why he's doing it. But when they walked in with Cohn, like Justice Brandeis said to him, "Do everything in my name." It's very, very seldom that a Chief Justice of the Supreme Court goes to visit a senator. And Brandeis was known as probably the greatest judge ever in the Supreme Court of the last couple hundred years. So they saw Cohn walking in, which means the Brandeis, it was a gefelache, ibelevin is by the senators. And he told them what they're doing and why. They said, "Sure, we're going to help." And so they all marched in, all three senators, to the State Department. And the State Department, they saw Cohn, which means Mr. Judge Brandeis. Who knows if once in 20 years a Supreme Court justice goes to the State Department. That's not an ordinary thing. And three big senators come, "Oh, Ibigishak and Grown, what can we do for you?" And they told them they arrested Rabbi Schneerson for counter-revolution. So they read right away, he said, "I'm going to send a telegram in the name of the State Department this moment to Moscow. Free Rabbi Joseph Isaac Schneerson. He has done no crime." It's going out right away. And then we're going to call every free world, every free country in the entire world where we have a United States embassy. And we will tell them to send in the same telegram, free the Rebbe. So the telegrams came in from the whole world, Sweden, Finland, Holland, Belgium, you name it, Italy, every country in the world, the South America, all the countries, Colombia, and all that area near the Suez, and African countries that were free, the whole world. So all that came in so much that they couldn't do anything. It was too much, too hot to handle for the communists in Moscow, and they saved the Rebbe's life on his birthday, Yud Beis Tammuz, when the Rebbe was saying, "Tilim podo v'sholem nafshi." Evishter, you redeem my soul in peace. And the door opened up, and the jailer said, "Come out, you're free." So the father in Boston who sent them, the big chassid, he knew every minute counts, every minute at a fast. Because when the Rebbe was arrested that same night, they arrested 11 religious leaders. The Rebbe was the only Jew. There were no other Jewish leaders in Russia because the communists took over in 1920. And this was 27. 7 years, no rabbi had a job. Every shul was closed. Every cheder was closed. So they had to feed their family. They had a job. They left. The Rebbe did not leave. The Rebbe was there. The Rebbe worked day and night to keep up Yiddishkeit to Russia. So when the Rebbe was brought that, they all rested the same night. And they all were interrogated and sent down Section 4, whatever it was. So the Rebbe went down Section 4, and it was a long, long building. If you go today, the building is a couple blocks long. And this hallway was dingy and dark. And the Rebbe was very tired. He hadn't eaten supper. And as he was walking down, there are other hallways went off of this big road. And one place was bright, and had a bench. So the Rebbe said, well, what's the hurry? I'll sit down the rest up. I need to fly. So what does the Rebbe do? What does a tzaddik do when he sits down and rests? He's close with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whatever, Tilim, Tanya, whatever you're saying. And as he's sitting there on the bench, a door opens up on the other side, and all kind of offices, all the one after the other. And a military man comes out, you know, a big shot in an officer uniform. And he says, what are you doing here? He says, I don't know. I was home eating supper with my family, and the police came, and they brought me here. What do you mean he brought you here? Well, what is your name? He says, Rabbi Schneerson. Where are you from? He says, I'm from Lubavitch. Oh, says the officer, Lubavitch, the good well. He says, when I was a child, I grew up in a little village like everybody else, and every morning the kids would get together and go to the well and bring a bucket of water for the house. Without water, you can't live. And then the well in our town went dry. So what can you do? We went to other surrounding little villages. And they wouldn't let us go near the well. And they said, we're not bad people. We're not hateful people. But if we let you take water, it'll go dry. Well, nobody will have anything. So we looked another place. Then we went to Lubavitch to get water. We came to Lubavitch, the town of Lubavitch. The rabbi of Lubavitch said, water from God. Everyone is free to come and take water. So every day we went to Lubavitch. We splashed each other. We played on the well and took home a bucket for the house. So the rabbi from Lubavitch, they're good people. There must be some mistake. Where were you supposed to go? He says, Section 4. When he said that, the guy turned white. No, he said, you're not going to go there. No. Sit here. Don't move. I'm going to call upstairs, and somebody will come and take you in another place. The guy knew what it meant. The other 10 people that were arrested that same night were either Christians or Muslim leaders, because they're not Jewish. And they were all interrogated and told to go down to Section 4, and they went. As soon as they opened the door, they were shot. Every single one killed on the spot before a trial or anything. That the guy knew that. That's why he turned white. He said, don't you go there. And then the Rebbe was taken upstairs, interrogated, and mistreated. Knocked on the stairs. It was very nice. Very not nice the way they treated the Rebbe. And they were there, I don't know how many, 15 days or so, exactly. And then in Yud Beis Tammuz, the work that the Radam from Boston and his son Oscar and Fred Peretz Rabinovich, that brought the Gula, the Nisim and the Floyds, that the Rebbe was saved, started in Springfield, and that's where they went to Washington, and the Rebbe was released. That's the big Simcha. The Chassidim heard about it the next day, so that's why Yud Beis and Yud Gimel Tammuz. The Reish Hashanah of Chassidus, like Hashanah for the world, are 2 days. The Hashanah for Chassidus is also 2 days. The Podah of Shalom Nafshi. That's a great Simcha Dachsidim tonight, tomorrow. That'll continue on for 2 days, thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for saving the life of the Rebbe and spreading the light of Chassidus, of Chabad Chassidus, in the entire world. Okay, Kinderach, you heard it?